right. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Daily Caller Podcast, the Friday video edition. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host, and I'm very excited. You can see the books here. We're going to get to the guest in just a second. We're also going to get to our delicious beer in just a second. But first, I got to tell you about a problem that the country is facing and has been facing for some time, and that's free riding of socialist healthcare countries on our backs. That's right. We're subsidizing much of the rest of the world when it comes to their prescription drug costs. Their governments are the sole gatekeeper to their people. And they say, if you don't sell us your drug at the price we want, we dictate, we're just going to steal your patent and make it ourselves. Well, that leaves our companies with a choice. Take nothing and get ripped off, or take something and take a loss. That means they always choose something because something is better than nothing. That means we end up paying more artificially for our prescription drugs. That's a problem. For years, politicians have been talking about this, and it's an outrage, and we shouldn't be doing these sorts of things, and we need to stop it, and then they do nothing about it. Well, President Trump is trying to do something about it to end this free ride. You can learn all about it. Just go to conservative.org, find out what the American Conservative Union is doing to stop this ridiculous practice and save you and us and all of us money. There, the bills are paid. Now let's get to the program. Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Parnell, New York Times bestselling author, former Army Ranger, and dad, which is most important. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Sean. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And we've got beer for you.
I come into an interview, and the first thing that you hand me is beer. We are off to a very, very good start.
If you turned it down, heroin was next. So I don't know. You asked for the Yingling. You had a choice between Budweiser and Yingling. Why Yingling?
I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm a Pittsburgh boy, blue-collar guy, born and raised in the city. Yingling is what I've drank my entire life. Well, from 21 on, it's what I've drank. But I love Yingling, and I love Pittsburgh. I love everything to do with the city, all the sports teams.
And so you're a Steelers fan?
Huge Steelers fan.
Isn't that tough?
I'm still, yeah.
Hey, I grew up in Detroit. We don't have a pro team. We just have the Lions.
I'm still very sad about the tie. How do you tie
Cleveland?
I know. Look,
Cleveland.
I knew it was coming. I had a feeling. Cleveland. Listen, Cleveland is.
You almost lost to Cleveland.
I know.
That's the worst part.
I'm just saying. I knew it was coming. Cleveland has a good team. They were a few critical players away.
Cleveland has a good team.
Last year they were sort of missing out on the quarterback, missing out on a strong running back. Now they have both. And so, as you probably know, all it takes is one great, solid game manager of a quarterback to turn a team around. And I think, Tyrod Taylor can be that guy. He's mobile enough, and he's a good enough pass threat that he keeps the linebackers in check. So, I'm making excuses.
If that lets you sleep at night, you do whatever you need to sleep at night after tying Cleveland. But Detroit got their ass handed to him on Monday Night Football, so I got nothing to talk about.
Yeah, they really did. But everyone sort of expects that.
Our quarterback is very consistent at throwing to the other team.
Well, Matt Stafford is good if your offensive line could actually protect him. He could spend most of the game on his back.
Or if you're the other team. True. He's very good. He makes really straight. Right in the breadbasket, he throws that ball to the other team. All right. I want to talk to you first about how a guy from Pittsburgh ends up being an Army Ranger.
Okay.
How does that happen?
Well, so I was just a college kid when 9/11 happened. I was a sophomore. I think I was an elementary education major, but I really didn't know what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Nobody does.
Yeah, the only thing I was majoring in was alcohol consumption. And so
legally at the age of 21.
Yeah, correct.
As a sophomore.
Correct.
We're not gonna do the math on that.
I remember one morning I woke up on my couch surrounded by beer cans and stagger over to the TV set and I turn it on just in time to see an airplane crash into the World Trade Center. And I don't know, man. I just feel like my whole life was boiled down to that moment, and within seconds, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I was angry. Like most everybody that witnessed 9/11.
Well, I was pissed. I remember that rage every year on September 11.
You probably remember exactly where you were and exactly what you were doing.
I do.
So same with me. And I just knew for me, it was like I wanted to join the infantry, and then I wanted to go to airborne school, and then I wanted to go to Ranger school, and I wanted to get in the fight as fast as humanly possible and be a part of America's collective response. And I got my chance, and we went to past all my schools by the skin of my teeth, and for some of them, but I made it through all the cool schools that the Army had to offer and that the Army threw at me, and I found myself in combat for not just a year. I was in combat for 16 months, heavy combat on
with
the front lines.
Leading the 10th Mountain Division. Yeah, part of the 10th. 24 years old, was it?
Yeah, part of the 10th Mountain Division. Like my unit was on the front lines in the trenches the whole time, so. Easy Company of the 101st Airborne jumped into Normandy and fought to Hitler's Eagle's Nest in less time than 485 days, which is the amount of time that we were in Afghanistan. So I mean, we never left. My base took over 3,000 rockets. We got shot at every day. It was absolute hell.
In doing some research about you, I was watching some archival footage of you and your platoon mates and some news reports and things. You guys had to use yourself as bait a lot of times.
All the time.
Basically, just kind of one around pretending, hey, we're just sitting here playing ping pong or something. Come attack us. You tried to draw them out.
Yeah.
That, I think, is the most puzzling part or most bizarre part that people watching would think. You had to try and get shot at in order to engage the enemy in combat. What is the thought process of somebody not coming up with that idea? Because I imagine whoever came up with that idea was sitting in an office somewhere.
But to
execute that idea.
I'll tell you exactly where it came from. The enemy that we were fighting over there was not farmers with pitchforks. These guys are like hardened jihadist fighters or hardened mujahideen that fought against the Russians in the 80s. They fought in the Afghan Civil War in the 90s and then against us in a post 9/11 era. And, you know, these mujahideen in Afghanistan, when we first got there, some of the old guys that fought against the Russian told us that the average mujahideen fighter has 18 or 20 years combat experience on an average 18-year-old American private. So these guys knew that we got into Afghanistan. They knew the terrain better than we did.
Right.
You know, they were well trained. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they were really, really hard to find. And so I remember in our very first engagement, it was May 7th, 2006, the first time I ever got shot at. We were coming around, just to give you a sense of how good these guys are. We're coming around this big mountaintop, right? As soon as we came around, we dipped low into the valley system, into this sort of looked like a gravy boat. The enemy attacked us right at that point because they knew that our comms were line of sight and we wouldn't be able to communicate with our base. They opened up on us with RPGs.
So they're...
They knew exactly what they were doing.
Do you think the American people understand how intelligent they are? Maybe they're not goat farmers, but they're just backwoods people who are, you know, live in tents and just are savages, and that's it. Their savagery is it. But there's actual serious intelligent thought behind their actions.
And we actually sat down across from some of them, like just at the negotiating table. They're fierce, man, and they take pride in their tactical acumen that they bring to the battlefield, man, that they can display. It's on display every day over there. But, I mean, think about it. They hit us. They knocked out our front truck. They knocked out my back truck. They had us trapped in the low ground, opened up on us with three machine gun positions on either side of us and just pounded us. And so that was the first time I was ever under fire.
You write about this in your first book. This book is a thriller. This is a fiction book. The first book was a recounting. It's called Outlaw Platoon, big New York Times bestseller. When you're sitting down, what made you decide to write that? Was it just in you percolating and you had to get it out where you recount this? Or did somebody come to you after having a couple of drinks and hearing your stories and saying, you know what, you should write this? Where did the idea come from?
Yeah, no. So my guys would go home on leave. You get 2 weeks break in a combat deployment called R&R, rest and relaxation. And then they'd go home and Americans would be like, oh, thank you for your service. You know, where were you deployed? And they'd be like, Afghanistan. And they'd be like, oh, thank God you were in Afghanistan and not Iraq, because Iraq was just so dangerous. And if you remember back at the time, 2006, the eyes of the nation were wholeheartedly focused on the debate over Iraq.
Right.
Should we be there or not? Should we send in more troops for the surge?
It was before the
or
surge.
Not? Yeah, and so it was before the surge. And so to everybody in this country, and
Afghanistan seemed like it was peaceful.
It was
taken care of.
Yeah, but it wasn't. And like, man, we got thrown into a meat grinder. And so I just wanted to like make sure that when I got back, I was able to capture the legacy that my soldier, the heroism and capture the legacy on the page for Americans to read. You know, Americans can pick up Outlaw Platoon 100 years from now and recognize the sacrifice.
It's required reading at West Point.
Don't ask me why. I have barely passed college myself.
Hey, somebody
has
written a book. If anybody wants to use my book as a textbook, I'm all for it. Let alone anything. If your community college wants it, we'll cut you a deal on the price. Forget West Point. That ain't going to happen.
I barely graduated college. So, I mean, I don't know how.
When you sit down to write this book, do you call the members of your platoon and say, hey, I'm thinking about this. You got to make sure that they're cool. These are your brothers.
Absolutely.
Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Make sure they're cool with you saying
100%.
This.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Outlaw Platoon did not have a political axe to grind. It didn't have an axe to grind against anybody, whether it was politics or otherwise. But, you know, you want to make sure that you get it. You describe events as accurate as possible. And everybody experiences engagements differently, you know. So you want to make sure that you get their perspective. So, yeah, of course, I talked to them a lot, you know, and if a part of the book had them in it, I talked to them about it first.
And they were all cool with it?
Mm-hmm. They said, yep.
So it comes out, it's a huge success. Were you caught by surprise?
Yes.
What's that like when you wake up in the morning and your agent is calling you and saying, hey, man, New York Times bestselling author is now a moniker that's going to hang on you forever?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I certainly didn't expect it. It hit the New York Times list in its first week on sale, and then I think was in its first year was on the Times list for 28 weeks, which is crazy. I mean, I had a
little
luck.
You're a barely literate guy from Pennsylvania whose football team ties the Browns. I know. And here you are on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. What about that story seems to resonate with people? You know, it's not – it's a human story. I mean, Outlaw Platoon is in 10 countries, and it's a quintessentially American story, but it sells in China and in Poland.
Would you say it's a story of heroism or bravery or just a sort of documenting what happened?
I think
people are craving –
I think it's a story.
Heroes,
yeah, I think it's a story of heroism and bravery, and really, it's a human story. It's about, I mean, almost every single day, somebody writes me about who their favorite member of the platoon was. It really is their story. It's really a triumph of the human spirit about what human beings can accomplish when under duress if they come together.
Before we get to the new book, I was again doing research on you this morning, cyber stalking you. Don't go through my internet history. Don't go past today either. Yeah. It would be really awkward to explain. But I saw a video blog that you did where you sort of, you don't like being referred to as a combat veteran.
Right.
Because you think that pigeonholes you. Talk a little bit about that. Because a lot of, whenever anybody sees anybody in a military or a former military, there's this societal pressure to run up and give them a hug, buy them a sandwich.
Exactly.
Thank you for this. You say no.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a part of my life 10 years ago. I mean, are you the same person that you were in high school?
Sadly, yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Well, you just blew my point out of the water.
Yeah,
but the point I'm trying to make is like, the war shaped me, and the training that I had shaped who I am today, but it doesn't define who I am today. Mm-hmm. Like, I went through absolute hell in Afghanistan. It was really hard, but I also had some of the best experiences of my life there. And so I just don't like... being treated as, you know, like anytime Fox News calls me or anybody else calls me, and I totally get it.
It's
like, it's
about
always about engagement in RC East Afghanistan.
War on terror.
You know? And it's like, it sort of whittles you down to like something that you were over 10 years ago for me.
Right.
And I, by the way, totally cool with going on the news and talking about that stuff, but I am more than that, you know?
Do you think that's common amongst your fellow veterans?
I do. I think it's...
When somebody comes up to you and says, thank you for your service... I assume part of you appreciates that, but at some point you just got to say enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, of course I appreciate it, you know, and, you know, because part of my mission in life is to try to bring people that enjoy freedom every day closer to the people that protect it. You know, with like the percentage of veterans has gone down since World War II. Those people that serve in this, it's like 0.4%.
Fewer and fewer people serve now.
It's like less than half of 1% or something, crazy low. And so, you know, I think... anytime you can bring civilians closer to veterans, it makes the country a little bit better. It makes people appreciate their freedom more. But you know, for me, like that's who I was. It's part of who I was, but it's not who I am now. And I'm trying to move past. I'm trying to it will always be part of me, but I'm trying to move on to other
things. Last question before we get to Eric Steele and Man of War. I read on your website about spinal fluid leaking from your ear and you're still leading people into combat.
Yeah.
What the hell, man?
I know. I mean, I get flack for this a lot, but in 2006, like traumatic brain injury, the whole TBI, it wasn't even an acronym. And so
now I'm wondering the logistics. How the hell does spinal fluid come out your ear?
I ended up having three small hairline fractures on my skull, and the cerebral spinal fluid was leaking out of my nose and my ears. And so the fractures healed on their own, but you know, it took a while. It took a couple weeks.
Scary. Well, thank you for your service. Now, your first book is a recounting of what really happened. Then you go to Man of War.
Yeah.
And you create a character named Steele, Eric Steele.
Yeah.
How do you make the transition? Because, you know, you wrote this one by yourself. The first one you sort of had
I had help.
Guide.
I did.
A co-author.
For sure. Taught me the ropes.
How do you decide I'm going to go fiction? Because I'm sure you could have written another story, another realistic story.
Yeah.
You couldn't put everything into one book.
Well, I'll tell you exactly why. I mean, I feel like there is a void in our culture today of mainstream action heroes that just love this country and believe freedom is worth dying for, and it's worth protecting. And you know, I grew up with films like Indiana Jones, where a freaking dude is punching Nazis. I grew up with that. Who doesn't want to punch a Nazi, you know? And then Marty McFly, you know, and Back to the Future. They were like the best movie. But our generation doesn't have heroes like that. Just keep Hollywood and you just keep rebooting the same things over and over again. MacGyver, Hawaii Five-0, it's like the same old stuff all the time, right? And so I just feel like it's really important to give our kids who pick up and read books fictional heroes that are good, that love the country, that are pro-American. You know, all I'll say is that there's a void out there right now in this genre and in mainstream fiction and in mainstream entertainment. There's not enough characters that love and appreciate
and
this
so
country.
You created one.
And
Eric
so I created.
Steele. Now,
yeah.
I've written some fiction. I've started. I have a lot of ideas rattling around in my vacant skull. And I find that as I flesh them out more, they mostly become masturbatory exercises in self-congratulation for me. You know, like, there's always a part of a character that I identify as myself, and he's super cool. Like, you know, that's bullshit, and I shelve it. Is Eric Steele Sean Parnell?
A little bit. I mean, so the bad guy in this book is a guy named Nathaniel West, and so Eric Steele was the guy that I always aspired to be in combat as a leader, you know, moral compass intact. Eric Steele's a guy that runs to the flames and not away from them. He believes that he can save people preserve innocent life if he can. Even if there's a ticking time bomb, if there's some time left in that clock and Eric can divert the mission to save somebody, he will. Nathaniel West, on the other hand, is the guy that sometimes I wish I could have been in combat and just unleashed everything. Sometimes you just get so frustrated and it's so primal and you're so savage that you just wish, if you just like let go of all the moral components of your psyche, I would have become Nate West in combat. And so Nate West, the villain in this book, is a part of me as well.
How do you make that decision and put it, is it cathartic to put it into fiction where you have a situation, I imagine, with all the combat that you saw, it's like, we have a mission, we have to get to here or stop this, but then there's these kids over here, there's some civilians or something, we can save some innocent lives or accomplish the mission, which is a horrible choice to be put in because your job is to complete your mission. How do you make that decision and how does that play into this book?
You know, I'm really impressed with that question because that's the theme of this book. Sometimes you can't save everybody, you know, for Eric Steele.
How do you accept that? Or do you?
I never did. We were always able to accomplish our mission. I mean, we never hurt any civilians. And if we could have saved people along the way, look, we were never on missions where there was a ticking time bomb, right? We had to be on target certain times to get certain high value targets. But if we could stop along the way to help people, we always did. And, you know, part of our mission in Afghanistan, you know, a main component of was to close with and destroy and kill the enemy. But another major component of that was taking care of the Afghan civilians because we need them to win the war. And so we did that. And, you know, but you're right. At the end of the day, you know, if your back is up against the wall, it's always mission first, 100% all the time. Even if you have soldiers bleeding out on the battlefield, your job is to complete the mission first. And that's how we're trained. And ultimately, that is what Eric Steele learns that in this book, that sometimes, you know, you're given two pretty terrible situations. One is completing the mission and the other one, you know what I mean? Like sometimes completing the mission means like a terrible decision. You know,
it really is an unenviable situation. What do you want people to come away from, not learning, but feeling from this? You got all the bigwigs in the thriller genre praising you. Brad Thor loves you. You got Lee Child.
Really lucky.
You.
I'm really lucky. I don't know. I mean, it's my first book, so I feel really
the first in a series.
First in a franchise series, hopefully. Yeah. And, you know, I wanted Americans to like I experienced a lot of combat. I put a lot of it in here too, you know, and I turned the volume up to 10 on all of it. So there's a lot of action for people that like entertainment and stuff like that. It's also accurate, you know, it feels authentic. And
Is it set in the real world, set in now, not an alternate universe different from ours?
Well, no, it's exactly. It's set in the real world. I mean, with fictional characters, obviously, but I created a clandestine world that was a part of our own, you know, that was inspired and born out of my experience in Afghanistan. We go after high value targets. It'd be like, we know the guys in that compound right over there. Like, we know he takes his kids to school on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Can we go get him? And like 24 hours later, you hear from Washington, D.C., like, yeah, go get him. And by the time you get there, he's gone. And so I'm like, what if we had a unit that had no oversight, reported directly to the president? And what if we called that unit the Alpha Program? And what if 9 alphas were responsible for each responsible for a different geographic area of the globe. And so that's sort of Eric Steele is the youngest alpha.
Are the rules of engagement the biggest obstacle you face over there, or one of the biggest?
It became one of the biggest. In 2006, we were allowed to handle it on the ground. And because of that, we killed 350 enemy soldiers and not one civilian. And in my opinion, we had the war won in Afghanistan in 2007 with one brigade combat team in Regional Command East. And it was in 2008 where there was a drastic shift of policy from counterterror to counterinsurgency. And we lost the initiative and might have lost the war. We're in a situation now where we win every battle on the ground, but somehow we're losing the war.
Yeah, well, we decided we want to make friends.
That's it. That's exactly right.
That's the problem. Yep, that's Sean Parnell, right. The book Man of War. I know you have a hard out. I'm going to ask you to sign these copies, and you can win a copy. Email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com, and you can win one of these signed copies. And I'm going to ask you to draw two names from here to suckers who entered early this week to win a copy of my book signed. And read them out loud if you can.
Oh, I got to pronounce the names
right? Because I can't. I have dyslexia. I'm also stupid, so I wouldn't be able to do
all right.
One of them.
So, Leon Flint.
Leon Flint.
Just for proof, Leon Flint. I pronounced that right.
Our man Flint. Yeah, I don't think you can screw that one up. Even an army.
And Amy Gleason.
Amy Gleason. And Leon Flint. You now have to get married. I could be wrong on that. We'll fact check it, but I'll contact you and send you a signed copy of my book. It's a pleasure to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you,
too. I hope you had a good time.
I did.
And if you need another beer, we've got
Cheers.
That.
Cheers, yeah. Thank
and,
you.
And good luck on this. Has Hollywood come calling yet for either one of the books?
Yes.
Outlaw Platoon would be right up their alley.
It is. I mean, it is. They're out there. I'll say that. We haven't picked a production company yet, but they're out there.
Last question, because I see we still have 2 minutes.
Of course.
Of all the movies that have been made about the war on terror that come close to somewhere semblance, obviously nothing is your experience and nothing is anybody else's experience.
Sure.
But if people want to get a sense of what it's like over there, has there been a movie that you've watched, or do you maybe not even watch the movies, where you say, there you go, your buddy's at S, that's what it's like? That's as close as it's going to get to what it's like.
Well, I think if you want to watch, like, get a sense of what the infantry experience is, it doesn't really matter what generation that you're in. You watch Band of Brothers. It's by far, that will give you
it's incredible.
It's amazing. It's the infantry experience right there. And that's what I wanted to be a part of when I joined. But if you want to watch a movie about the global war on terror, I recommend American Sniper, only because it has the home front, too, which is a critically important part.
How hard was it hard for you? Did you have difficulty readjusting?
I mean, yeah, I think everybody that experiences combat comes home and feels like you feel different. And sometimes you can feel isolated, you know, almost like you're in exile in your own country, precisely because, you know, so few Americans serve. Mm-hmm. And most people don't really know what it takes to defend freedom. So you can feel isolated. I did as well, but I found it helpful to focus on something bigger than myself and help veterans when they come home. So
are you doing better now?
I am doing
even
better.
Even though the Steelers suck.
That sucks. That's bad. That's a bad, I am doing better.
Sean Thanks. Parnell, go buy the book, Man of War, and then try to win a copy by emailing me. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.